I'm going to be talking about blessed are the peacemakers, so I'm hoping my voice is not going to give up on me. I was supposed to do this back in the summer, but I had lost my voice and couldn't do it. And it's interesting because the week I was supposed to do it was the week that there was all of the civil unrest and the riots and what have you going on. So it would have fit in quite nicely with that and everything that was going on. And I think never has there been a time where we want there to be peace in this nation and beyond. The world is just is just not a peaceful place. Conflict and disagreement are rife. And as I was preparing for this way back, actually, I think it was at the time when The Apprentice was on the telly and also The Great British Menu, both of which... Actually, I try not to get into The Apprentice these days because it really, really annoys me. I love A Great British Menu. But in The Apprentice, it's really interesting, and again, in the context of thinking about peacemaking, and this is just me, again, the way that I'm wired, and I'm a bit mischievous as Dave probably, is that they get called, don't they, in the middle of the night to... And Alan Sugar will be going, right, you need to get ready in half an hour and be ready to go out the door. And I said to Dave, if that was me answering the phone, knowing I had to get ready in half an hour, I don't think I would go and tell everybody else that they too needed to go and get ready too. It's a competition, right? So you've got to win it. It's not a team sport, The Apprentice, actually. It's a very individual one, and I think some of the things you see through that, again, because it's really, really competitive, there's not much peacemaking that goes on, even in the context of those group activities they do. So that was just interesting. And then in The Great British Menu, and this is, again, completely different, although one week actually really stood out to us. It was the Scottish week. I don't think being the Scottish week had anything particularly to do with it. But... usually in the kitchen, there is just this sense of harmony and everybody helping one another and to get what they need done. I mean, these chefs are like top of their game, very much top of their game, and they're all helping one another. And although it's a competition, everybody contributes to help to get there, except during this week, Scottish week, where it all kicked off a little bit, didn't it? And Dave will remember this. And one of the chefs, again, was sort of refusing to help in the kitchen to get the job done. And it was really interesting to watch, because ordinarily there is harmony and there's peace in the situation in The Great British Menu. Again, and the guy that won it this time, interestingly, he's a completely plant-based chef. And he was interesting because although he's a completely plant-based chef, he still handled meat. It wasn't a problem to him to handle meat and help do the meat prep. So, again, those were just some things that went through my mind, different things where in The Apprentice there's not much peace, but in those kitchens in The Great British Menu, an element of peace. And then in my own life recently, again, we've had some stuff going on in our family over a number of years. My mum needed to sort out her will. And in the end, we came to the conclusion that her estate needed to go to the grandchildren. And now my mum said to me, she said, oh, that's really interesting that you actually agreed to that. Me being a bit of a troublemaker sometimes. She said, I thought you might have really pushed back against that. And I thought, well, no, actually, because I was trying to bring some peace and order into what is a very tricky situation and still is. But in that situation, I was able to be the peacemaker, which again completely surprised my mum. But anyway, so the dictionary definition of peacemaker is a person who tries to persuade people or countries to stop arguing or fighting and to make peace. In Matthew 5 and verse 9, Jesus is stating that blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God. And peacemakers in that context are those who promote God's peace. This peace is taken from the Hebrew word shalom, which can be defined as total or complete well-being, both personally and communally. And it's really funny, again, this is just something me and Freddie do, is every time we greet each other, either on the phone or if he comes to me, we will say shalom, is what we do. He'll go, I'll say, oh, shalom, Fred, and he'll say shalom, Mum, or whatever. And then, that's just what we do, because we want to speak peace over one another. And when you make peace... And again, I think this comes back to what I did in that family situation. I was reflecting the likeness of God. And that is when people see him in us. In that moment with my family, I was a reflection, whether or not they recognise it, of the Prince of Peace. And because of that, I can be called a son of God. So peacemakers in the scriptures would step between two warring parties. The peacemaker initiates reconciliation when others have wronged them. The peacemaker is quick to repent when they have wronged others. In a world where we have been discipled to avoid conflict, peacemaking takes a commitment to move it forward. So the words peacemaker in Hebrew are Osei Shalom. I hope I pronounced that properly. And that literally means makers and doers of peace. And we can find some of these expressions used in the Jewish prayer book. It says, if you want to make peace with your enemy, you have to work with your enemy. Then he becomes your partner. Peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved by understanding. In Romans 14, verse 19, it says, doesn't it? So then, let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. And then, this made me laugh. It's the unofficial UN motto says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall take flak from both sides. How true is that in life? So to bring this whole theme of being a peacemaker to life, I think it'd be good to look at scripture to show us what peacemaking looks like. And we're going to look at the example of Abigail, and that's found in 1 Samuel and 25. And I'm going to read the whole passage from the message. It's quite a long passage, but we're going to use the example of Abigail as being a peacemaker and what being a peacemaker really, really looks like. So, Samuel died. The whole country came to his funeral. Everyone grieved over his death, and he was buried in his hometown of Ramah. Meanwhile, David moved again, this time to the wilderness of Maon. There was a certain man in Maon who carried on his business in the region of Carmel. He was very prosperous, 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and it was sheep shearing time in Carmel. The man's name was Nabal, which means fool, a Calebite, and his wife's name was Abigail. The woman was intelligent and good-looking. The man was brutish and mean. David, out in the back country, heard that Nabal was shearing his sheep. And sent 10 of his young men off with these instructions. Go to Carmel and approach Nabal. Greet him in my name. Peace, life, and peace to you. Peace to your household. Peace to everyone here. I heard that it is sheep shearing time. Here's the point. When your shepherds were camped near us, we didn't take advantage of them. They didn't lose a thing all the time they were with us in Carmel. Ask your young men, they'll tell you. What I'm asking is that ye be generous with my men and share the feast. Give whatever your heart tells you to your servants and to me, David, your son. David's young men went and delivered this message word for word to Nabal. Nabal tore into them. Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? The country is full of runaway servants these days. Do you think I'm going to take good bread and wine and meat, freshly butchered for my sheep shearers, and give it to men I've never laid my eyes on? Who knows where they've come from? David's men got out of there and went back and told David what he had said. And David said, strap on your swords. They all strapped on their swords. David and his men set out, 400 of them, 200 of them staying behind to guard the camp. Meanwhile, one of the young shepherds told Abigail, Nabal's wife, what had happened. David sent messengers from the back country to salute our master, but he tore into them with insults. Yet these men have treated us very well. They took nothing from us and didn't take advantage of us all the time we were in the fields. They formed a wall around us, protecting us day and night, all the time we were out tending the sheep. Do something quickly, because big trouble is ahead for our master and all of us. Nobody can talk to him. He's impossible, a real brute. Abigail flew into action. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep dressed out and ready for cooking, a bushel of roasted grain, 100 raisin cakes and 200 fig cakes, and she had it all loaded on some donkeys. Then she said to her young servants, go ahead and pave the way for me. I am right behind you. But she said nothing to her husband, Nabal. As she was riding her donkey, descending into a ravine, David and his men were descending from the other end. So they met there on the road. David had just said, that sure was a waste, guarding everything this man had out in the wild so that nothing he had was lost. And now he rewards me with insults, a real slap in the face. May God do his worst to me if Nabal and every cur in his misbegotten brood aren't dead meat by morning. That's not very peaceable, is that? So he went, what's interesting, he went from going here, I come in peace, to wanting to rip into him. As soon as Abigail saw David, she got off her donkey and fell on her knees, her face to the ground in homage, saying, my master, let me take the blame. Let me speak to you. Listen to what I have to say. Don't dwell on what that brute Nabal did. He acts out of the meaning of his name. Fool, foolishness. Foolishness oozes from him. I wasn't there when the young men my master sent arrived. I didn't see them. And now my master, as God lives and as you live, God has kept you from avenging his murder. And may your enemies, all who seek my master's harm, end up like Nabal. Now take this gift that I, your servant girl, have brought to my master and give it to the young men who follow in the steps of my master. Forgive my presumption, but God is at work in my master. Developing a rule, solid and dependable. My master fights God's battles. As long as you live, no evil will stick to you. If anyone stands in your way, if anyone tries to get out of your way, know this. Your God-honoured life is tightly bound in the bundle of God-protected life. But the lives of your enemies will be hurled aside as a stone is thrown from a sling. When God completes all the goodness he has promised my master and sets you up as a prince over Israel, my master will not have this dead weight in his heart, the guilt of an avenging murder. And when God has worked things for good for my master, remember me. And David said, blessed be God, the God of Israel. He sent you to meet me. And blessed be your good sense. Bless you for keeping me from murder and taking charge of looking out for me. A close call. As God lives, the God of Israel, who kept me from hurting you, if you had not come quickly as you did, stopping me in my tracks by morning, there would have been nothing left of Nabal but dead meat. Then David accepted the gift she brought him and said, return home in peace. I've heard what you said, and I'll do what you've asked. When Abigail got home, she found Nabal presiding over a huge banquet. He was in high spirits and very, very drunk. So she didn't tell him anything of what she'd done until the morning. But in the morning, after Nabal had sobered up, she told him the whole story. Right there and then, he had a heart attack and fell into a coma. About 10 days later, God finished him off and he died. I love that. I love the Bibles and just these things that just happen. You know, people turning to pillars of salt just like that. You know, people dropping dead. The way this is written, it's brilliant. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be God who has stood up for me against Nabal's insults and kept me from an evil act and let Nabal's evil boomerang back on him. Then David sent for Abigail to tell her that he wanted her for his wife. David's servants went to Abigail at Carmel with the message, David sent us to bring you to marry him. She got up and then bowed down, face down on the ground, saying, I am your servant. I'm ready to do anything you want. I'll even wash the feet of my master's servants. Abigail didn't linger. She got on her donkey and with her five maids in attendance went with the messengers to David and became his wife. David also married Ahinom of Jezreel. Both women were his wives. Saul had married off David's wife Michal to Palti, son of Laish, who was from Gelim. This is the word of the Lord. Praise be to God. So there's quite a lot in that story, but I think what we can see in that, and again, what we'll do now is we'll go into what the characteristics of a peacemaker are in the context of this story. I think firstly, any peacemaker, peace must rule in their own heart. Billy Graham said, to be a peacemaker, you must know the peace giver. And John 14 and verse 27 says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give it to you. Let your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Do you know how to access that peace that surpasses all understanding that we read about in Philippians 4, verse 7? David was a man after God's own heart, and his starting point in this story, as we've read, was to go in peace and to speak peace into Nabal's household. says it, doesn't it, in verse 6. Go to Carmel and approach Nabal. Greet him in my name. Peace, life, and peace to you. Peace to your household. Peace to everyone here. And I think often our responses to situations are representative of what's inside our hearts at any given time. So the best place to begin a process of peacemaking begins with looking at yourself. And David's starting point was peace. If we can personally find inner peace that is rooted in Jesus, we will be in a better position to project that peace upon others. Ken Sande, in his book, The Peacemaker, A Biblical Guide to Resolving Personal Conflict, writes, "Peacemakers are people who breathe grace. They draw continually on the goodness and power of Jesus Christ, and they bring his love, mercy, forgiveness, strength, and wisdom to the conflicts of daily life. God delights to breathe his grace through peacemakers and use them to dissipate anger, improve understanding, promote justice, and encourage repentance and reconciliation." And as I read that quote, I would, again, thinking about that situation with my family, in that moment, I had to use the wisdom of God. It wasn't my own personal wisdom, because I'm not benefiting now from that situation of my mum's estate. It wasn't about me benefiting. And I suppose my mum, you know, saying to me, well, I was really surprised, was all about, I thought you might be upset because you're not going to benefit. But actually in that situation, because I want to get to a place of reconciliation in my family, I had to have the wisdom of Jesus to really help me to be a peacemaker. And I think Nabal's young men knew that Abigail had peace in her heart and would react to the situation peaceably. When they say, oh, do something quickly because big trouble's ahead of us, I think they went to her because she knew what to do. And then secondly, peacemakers are active. They're not passive. Hebrews 12 and verse 14 says, "Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord." Psalm 34 and verse 14 says, "Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it." Pursuing peace does not mean we avoid the conflict or the dispute or the disagreement. There's a tendency, isn't there, for us to just push conflict to one side and not deal with it. Often in the workplace, you know, people don't want to deal with the difficult stuff. They don't want to have the difficult conversation to put things right, and things then end up worse than they should be. Keeping the peace by doing nothing is rarely an option in kingdom matters, although I think we do need to discern which battles we are going to commit our time and energy to, so that there can be mutual benefit for all. There are some things that just aren't worth it. You know, you often hear that, don't you? Pick your battles. There's just some things that just aren't worth the time and energy. And it's interesting, isn't it? And I said this, David, in the end, he goes from being peaceable and declaring peace over his household to wanting a proper fight and getting people to put their swords on and all of the rest of it, because he wasn't received as he thought he should be, which is interesting. One minute he's there, and the next minute he's there. But Abigail, she pursues peace and is discerning about how she manages this. So she didn't tell her husband, which, again, you can debate that till the cows come home, I'm guessing. But she didn't tell him because she, you know, because that wouldn't have gone well for her. And she flew into action, didn't she, and got all the food together and was all the rest of it and went to David and the servants then presented them with this stuff, which, again, is interesting. Thirdly, peacemakers are gentle in spirit. James 3 and verse 17 and 18 says, "But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." Abigail, in contrast to Nabal, who was described as harsh, she was described, I think, I can't remember what it said in there, but she was described not as being harsh. She was described as being harsh. She was very gentle in her approach. As soon as she saw David and got off her donkey, she fell to her knees and, you know, sort of pled with him to listen to what she had to say, and decided, you know, and said, "Don't listen to him. He's a fool. His foolishness oozes from him." And this is what David said to her. Just reminding us in verse 32 to 4, it said, "And David said, 'Blessed be to God, the God of Israel, he sent you to meet me and blessed me with your good sense.'" She was a woman full of good sense, and we'll come on to that in a minute. A close call was, God, the God of Israel, who kept me from hurting you. Because if he, you know, if she hadn't have come, the story would have been quite different. I think she brings a sense of calm because of her gentle nature back into a very tricky situation. Fourthly, peacemakers are resolute in the truth, but also full of common sense. Nelson Mandela said, "As I've said, the first thing, to be honest with yourself. You can never have an impact on society if you've not changed yourself. Great peacemakers are all people of integrity, of honesty, and humility." When I was sort of thinking about the disorder, and again, this would have made sense if I'd preached this on the day when all of the stuff was happening, I think there was a number of key moments in Bristol where we saw people standing resolute in truth. One particular example was the situation outside that hotel where people were guarding the entry to that building so that people in there would not get harmed. And then the big one, and I think it was just so interesting, was when there was the anti-riot demonstration, or whatever we want to call it, in Old Market. People stood resolute in the truth that, no, in our city, this stuff was not gonna happen. Really, really powerful scenes. And we're grateful that it could have been a whole lot worse. And it came... peace was resumed quite quickly. And I know there's tensions and all of the rest of it, but actually it could have been a lot worse. Abigail was described as discerning of the truth, and she knew where the Lord was at work. She was also discerning in the way she managed the situation without involving Nabal, who would not have had the same perspective, and it wouldn't have ended well for her. We all have already seen that she was sensible and intelligent, and she brings David back to that place of peace. And it says in verse 35, just as a reminder, "Then David accepted the gift she brought to him and said, 'Return home in peace. I've heard what you said, and I'll do what you've asked.'" People listened to her. I think she was also patient as well. And I think peacemakers do need to kind of be patient. And again, in this world where we want things sorted and resolved now, actually, there's a waiting game to be played. We want to rush, don't we, for an outcome. Again, in my family, this has been going on for 3 years now. So it's a long time. And there is a sense, my mum wanting these things to be dealt with and dealt with quickly, because that's what you do, don't you? You sort of deal with it, sweep it under the carpet, and we don't talk about that ever again. However, there's a journey to go on, and it's a bit of a waiting game. And we keep having to remind mum that whilst it's not sorted now, we're not saying never. It's just not right now. Verse 9 says, "When David came, David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited." Now, I don't think we really know how long they waited, but given that the word waited is used, I'm assuming there was a pause in time. But then I get the sense that David reacted before taking time to discern what was actually going on. Waiting to respond is really, really powerful. And I think sometimes that pause, just to take stock, just to give a bit of space, not to react, is a really powerful thing. I often say this to people in job interviews, actually. Don't try and get everything out at once. Use a pause to just take a moment to think about what you're saying. You can walk away from things and come back to them later, or leave them for periods of time for things to calm down and for perspective to be gained. And I think that's what Abigail did. When she got home, she found Nabal, didn't she? And she didn't tell him then. So there's two times she didn't tell him what was going on. But in this moment, I think she waited for the right time to tell him what had gone on. And then, of course, he dropped dead. I do wonder whether during the 10 days, though, she was getting a bit impatient. I thought, can't you just finish him off like there and then? But once he was gone, she didn't really hang around, did she? No, she went, and she went off to David, and she married him. which again is just fascinating, isn't it? These sort of things of waiting, lingering, going quickly. It's all part of the process that we go through. And each situation that we'll be dealing with where we need to bring peace will be very different. And again, and I do believe, yeah, peace can be restored like that, if that's the case. But often these things take time, as we see with a lot of the conflicts that are going on in the world today. So in conclusion, Pope Benedict said, "Peace, however, is not merely a gift to be received. It's also a task to be undertaken. In order to be true peacemakers, we must educate ourselves in compassion, solidarity, working together, fraternity, in being active within the community, and concerned to raise awareness about national and international issues and the importance of seeking adequate mechanisms for the redistribution of wealth, the promotion of growth, cooperation for development and conflict resolution." Quite a lot in that quote, but I think a lot to learn. So here, just as I come into land, are four things for every aspiring peacemaker to do. Firstly, look inwardly. Have a look at yourself. Check with your own heart. Ask God to search you. It says in Psalm 139 and 23-24, and this is the message again, "Investigate my life, O God. Find out everything about me. Cross-examine me and test me so I can get a clear picture of what I'm about. See for yourself whether I've done anything wrong." That getting a clear picture of what I'm about, I think, is really, really important. So, again, in the context of being a peacemaker. Secondly, listen intently. Listening intently and actively helps us to discern what is happening. And this is something I've had to practice over a lot of years because I'm quite good at jumping in with a pithy statement or a solution. I've had to kind of train myself to listen to what is going on before I jump in and try and respond with a solution. Often we live so close to the heart of the issues, we can't see things clearly, and it's difficult to be objective in these moments. And after time, it might be difficult to remember the core cause of the issue. But peacemakers will listen intently, help to bring clarity, and be slow to speak. Thirdly, we need to affirm the thoughts and feelings and perspectives of others. And that's of everybody involved. And that can be really, really difficult. We may not agree with someone on an issue, but we are obliged to be gracious and give validity to how people may see things. Proverbs 25, verse 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. This is really, really difficult. And again, recently at work, and again, there's some HR legislation, new things that's coming in, or that we're having to manage, in that perspective or your worldview, you have to take it into account. So that whole you do you and what you believe is right in any given situation, I can't challenge that. And you can have the weirdest, wackiest views in the world, however they're your views. And we have to do that, give validity to those views and accept them as an individual's views. It's really, really difficult. And the world is moving more to that way of dealing with things. So you can no longer say that you're wrong for believing a particular thing. That gets you into all sorts of trouble. And it's interesting, and it's only going to get worse. So, and it's difficult, isn't it, to put yourself into other people's shoes and imagine why they might have a certain perspective on things. And the way we get through that is we ask questions to help us discern the root of the problem so we can move forward towards peaceful resolutions. And then lastly, we must forgive. The German pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in a letter to a young married couple, wrote, "Live together in forgiveness, for without it, no human relationship, least of all marriage, can survive. Accept each other as you are and forgive each other daily from the bottom of your hearts." Romans 12, verse 18 puts it like this, "If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all, because blessed be the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God."